welcome to another show. I'm Father Roderick, recording this on a nice, breezy, sunny Saturday afternoon. Or Saturday, it's a Friday, actually. I'm ahead of my game, that's all I can tell. We've got a great show ahead, plenty of topics to talk about, lots of geek stuff as usual, and enjoy! As always, this episode is brought to you by my patrons, and they are the reason that you don't have to fast forward through I don't know how many ads. Just the other day, I was listening to a podcast from the tech network, and I'm used to all sorts of weird advertisements, sometimes about underwear or food services. This time, it was about, what was it about? I was like, oh my gosh, about toothbrushes. Like, I'm listening to a tech show, and all of a sudden, I get like a 10-minute ad about toothbrushes? Really? So that's why I prefer the Patreon system. Just whoever likes this show, wants to keep it ad-free, wants to help me produce these shows, become a patron. It's super simple. Go over to patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And if you do so, you get access to an exclusive podcast series that you can just subscribe to as any other podcast, but you need to be a patron to be able to access that. And that's kind of a behind-the-scenes, after-show type of show. And this week, I've got, I think, some interesting news for those of you that are patrons, because we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening behind the scenes of the website of Tridio, and good things are coming. But that's for patrons. That's for later. Let's first take a look at the news.
Do you know what's going on? This is what's happening in your world.
They said Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Well, this week was unexpected, very different from what I actually planned to be doing this week. I got ill. I came back from the Efteling, the fairy tale park that I talked about last week, and I started with a bit of a cold, and it got worse. And on Sunday, I had to do two masses in the morning, and the first mass was the worst. I mean, I had a couple of handkerchiefs with me, but the first one was already, well, I won't go into details, I don't want to gross you out, but it was unusable after 5 minutes, and then during the homily, the second one became unusual, and then unusable, and then my nose was still full of snot, and I didn't have any other handkerchiefs with me. Suffice it to say that it was not fun. And then the second mass improved slightly, and then I got a headache. And then from Monday till Wednesday, I've been really, really sick. Headache, a bit of a fever as well. Just completely out of energy. Sneezing, a bit of a sore throat. Just unable to work. Which is annoying because, well, these weeks I'm supposed to do a lot of work in advance so I can free up the second half of the year. But fortunately, I didn't have anything planned in terms of filming. I'm going to film next week, and I'm probably going to be right in time for that. So tomorrow I'll be interviewing a Carmelite nun. The next day I'm going to film an interview with an auxiliary bishop and with a few members of the Swiss Guard, the Vatican's Swiss Guard. And then on Monday I'll be interviewing a banker. And these three people, or three people and some Swiss Guards, have one thing in common that they're going to do next week. They are going to walk the biggest, or participate in the biggest walking event of the Netherlands, which happens over the course of 4 days in the city of Nijmegen, I think. I'm not sure what the English name is, but Nijmegen in Dutch, where people walk either 50 or 40 or 30 kilometers. The weather is going to be very unfavorable. It's going to be extremely hot during those days. And literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people are participating in that event. And this year, I've never been there. I've never walked the event myself. But this year, I'm going to follow the people that I just mentioned because they are all going to walk for 4 days. And I wanted to hear their story, their personal story, the story of their life. It's the story of a nun, of someone who's at the Swiss Guard, a Catholic banker, and an auxiliary bishop, and what that walk means to them. And if there are any parallels between walking and their walk in faith or their walk in life, I think it's going to be a really, really cool way to kind of take that very popular cultural event in my country and give it a Catholic twist and bring in some depth in that. So that's happening next week. So I'm very, very glad that I won't have a cold at that time. And then the last 2 days, I was gradually getting slightly better. So I did do quite a bit of work, actually more than I probably should have because I wasn't feeling that well. But I did a lot of preparation for upcoming shows that I'm going to film. I'm 3 weeks away from a summer camp that I'm going to be the pastor of. It's a summer camp organized by my diocese. And then I've got about 10 days of vacation in Spain with my priest friends. So I want to get as much done as possible before that. I'm losing track of time. On Wednesday evening, we had our first day of our first outing with the new pastoral team. I think I've mentioned before that my parish will be working together with the neighboring parish, and that will be taken care of by one pastoral team. And so there are a few more members that are added to the team. And they went out for a bike ride. I bailed on that. I was like, yeah, I'm probably should not do that because I may get bronchitis, or, you know, if you have a severe cold and you're coughing, then it's better to rest. But I joined them for dinner in the evening. That was great. And then yesterday evening, on Thursday evening, we had our farewell dinner with our current pastor, who is going to the city of Arnhem, and members of the people that govern the parish here. So that was also very cool, very, very nice, nice food. And I was happy that in both cases, I could do my ketogenic diet. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the health section. But it's always tricky when you eat out, when you're on a diet. And you don't want to offend, of course, the people that invite you to dinner. But at the same time, there's your health and your goals and your priorities when it comes to losing weight and getting fit. But I was able to make it all work. And then finally, on that same Sunday that I was so ill and so, you know, sick, I received a visit from four people from the United States, Chris and Julian Zimmerman and another couple that they're friends with. And they were visiting the Netherlands, among other countries, and wanted to stop by in my parish, go to Mass, and then afterwards have lunch. And so I showed them around. We had lunch. Beautiful, gorgeous, gorgeous day, which is really rare in the Netherlands to have this kind of weather. And then showed them around a little bit in Amersfoort. The ladies went shopping, and I took the guys to the studio here, showed them around, and we brainstormed a little bit about ideas to reach the younger generation. It was a lot of fun. But when they left, I was pretty much wiped out. And the next couple of days, I was really sick. So they actually visited on the best day possible, given the circumstances. So I'm very happy for them. It was their last day in the Netherlands, and they're back home safely now. It's always, and then they told me that their youngest son, 11 years old, is a fan of Father Rodri, listens to the show. So I gave them a copy of my book, Geek Priest, and then they posted a photo with their son reading it. So that was a lot of fun. Record a small video message for him. It's those moments of encounter, and I'm not always able to do that. Sometimes I'm not home, sometimes I'm too busy or filming or whatever, but when I can, I love to meet you, my audience, the people that I sometimes only know because of their email address or because they're patron or because they've, sometimes I don't even know them because they've never commented or never reacted. And still, meeting people in real life kind of makes me feel connected to them much more than when I'm just sitting here at the microphone and in front of my my webcam. But let's move over to the world of movies and TV shows.
I do not like movies.
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl and that kid sees dead people and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm gonna give it to you.
Well, because I was sick, I didn't have any energy to go to the movies. Probably would have been very charitable either, because you know, you risk to infect other people. I think over the course of a common cold, you stay, infectious. So you can still infect other people, which I don't want to do. That's why on Sunday I asked other people to distribute communion, and I didn't go in the back of the church to shake hands. I just don't want to pass it on. I want to pass on a lot of stuff, but not illness. So I didn't go to the movies. Probably wasn't much at the movies that was worth my time, other than Solo, which is always worth my time. There is Ocean's 8, I think, or Ocean... What is it? I've lost count. I'm not a big fan of the franchise. There's now a women's version of that. Could be entertaining, although John Domek is a friend of mine. He saw it and he says, yeah, it's okay. It's nothing to get too excited about. And there are some horror movies or scary movies that I don't dare to go to. We're still waiting for Ant-Man and the Wasp, the next Marvel movie, which opened reasonably well, but it certainly wasn't as successful as Avengers. But Disney is okay with it. I mean, this could be overkill, just like we have a bit of Star Wars fatigue that probably also impacted the box office results of Solo. There may also be superhero fatigue, even though Ant-Man and the Wasp, when I saw the trailers, I was like, that's just fun. It's a movie you just watch because it's a popcorn movie and it's fun. And it, you know, yeah, if you have the budget, then it's one of those movies you just go and see. But it's not, it premieres next week. So probably next time I'll do my review, hopefully, if I'm not too busy. There's a totally different type of movie that I want to review today, or just very briefly. And it is a classic movie, a Hitchcock movie, one of his most famous ones. And the reason that I was going to watch it was because it was on the list to get kicked in the bucket, or how would you say that, by Netflix. So Netflix licenses movies and TV shows for a certain amount of time. And then after a certain amount of time, they let go of the license. Or if it's very popular, they may renew it. Well, the movie that was going to be canned was Hitchcock's Vertigo, which, believe it or not, I have never seen. Vertigo is considered to be one of his masterpieces, although almost every Hitchcock movie is a masterpiece, mostly because of his incredible, innovative way of telling stories and to film. He is one of the inventors of modern cinematic composition and the way he uses these very long takes and moves the camera to create a very diverse palette of composition, so that you don't even notice that the camera is still rolling, but you've been watching the actors for, I don't know, 5 minutes, but it's not a static camera. They don't do any cuts to bring in the action, but it's the camera movement itself that helps tell the story and helps you stay engaged, because he's so creative in moving. And sometimes you're watching the camera move in one of the first scenes of Vertigo, when they're in a restaurant and the camera is making these moves, and you're like, how do they even do that, moving a camera in a restaurant full of people and everybody's acting for so long? It's quite amazing. But also, the story is pretty cool. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's the story of a police officer, a detective, who is afraid of heights. And the opening scene is very cool. It takes place on a rooftop. It's a chase, a classic chase scene on the rooftops. And just as the guy is about to apprehend the whatever burglar or criminal that he's pursuing, he falls off the ledge of a building and hangs. And then the other police officer reaches out, and it's the classic trope, you know, take my hand. And he fails to take the hand of the police officer. And so the guy who tries to save him falls to his death. And from that moment on, this police officer or this detective has an incredible fear of heights. And then he gets hired or he gets contacted by an old friend who tells him that his wife is behaving very strangely. She's disappearing for hours and hours. And then he asks a kind of a favor of his old friend. Can you please follow this person? And at first, of course, the police officer is hesitant because, well, because of his vertigo, he's kind of planning or has just left the police force or is planning on doing so. Anyway, he's out of commission for a while, and then he decides to kind of indulge his friend and follow that woman, and then he's the mystery starts, because and then you follow along, and it's filmed. That's the classic Hitchcock. You feel that you're in the footsteps of this guy, and you are discovering the truth with him. And then, of course, it ends with lots of vertigo. Otherwise, the movie wouldn't be called like that. Well, there was one very cool thing that I noticed at the start of the movie, and this is Hitchcock, and Hitchcock is considered its study material. When I was still in Rome, we were analyzing Hitchcock movies to learn how to do shots, how to compose your shots. And we would freeze frame, and then the teacher would tell us, well, look at what he's doing here, and this is the kind of lens he's using here. This is how he goes from this composition to this composition, and also the reasons why. It's not just showing off, look what I can do with this camera. But it's also every shot, every composition has a function to emphasize certain aspects of the story. So a lot of the filmmakers that we currently know and that are making movies have been taught camera composition by watching and analyzing Hitchcock movies. And so you see often in modern movies homages, references, little winks to classic scenes in Hitchcock movies. Sometimes they will even just rip off the plots from Hitchcock movies and give it a new coat of paint and then sell it anew because it was so brilliant what Hitchcock did that you can still sell it today. Well, I was watching that chase sequence on the rooftops at the beginning of the movies, and all of a sudden I thought, I've seen this before, but I haven't seen this movie. Where did I see this exact sequence, this exact type of filming a chase sequence on the rooftops? And it took me a minute, and I was like, I know, this is The Matrix. This is the first chase sequence of The Matrix, where they're in The Matrix, obviously, and they're pursuing this guy on the rooftops, and everybody runs, and you get the... But it's like in overdrive, but a lot of the sequence that you see in The Matrix, this chase on the rooftops, and later on, the first test of Neo, when he's invited to jump over from one building to another building that is impossibly far away, and it's basically a test so that Neo starts to master the Matrix and learns that he's not in a real world, but it's a computer-generated world. So basically, he can't die, and vertigo is illogical. Is not necessary because he's in a construct. That scene too is, I think, a direct homage to Vertigo, to the movie Vertigo by Hitchcock, and just very, very fun to see the original, because I didn't realize I'm a huge fan of The Matrix, and I'm very, very excited that they're actually going to bring The Matrix back. They're working on sequels or prequels or anything. It's probably, but it's going to be a continuous part of the existing Matrix saga, which I'm very, very happy with. Instead of doing a reboot, they'll just tell other stories in that universe. I never realized that The Matrix was actually, at least in that scene, based on the great work of Hitchcock. Just a tip, go check it out. Unfortunately, right after I watched Vertigo, Netflix took it offline, and there's no other streaming service that has it. So I guess there's still a place for Blu-rays and DVDs. All right, let's go to the world of books.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
I'm continuing with the books segment because it also has a bit of a tie-in to the movie segment. I was reading an article about the upcoming last season of one of the most acclaimed television series currently being produced, which is House of Cards. Now, of course, you know, even if you haven't seen House of Cards, you know that there's been this massive row about Kevin Spacey, who plays the main character of House of Cards, Frank Underwood, this politician, low-life politician, who works his way to the top by killing, by committing treason, by betraying people. And he's always accompanied by his wife, Carrie Underwood, or Claire, sorry, Claire Underwood, Carrie Underwood, someone else, Claire Underwood, and then right between, I think, season five and the final season, season six, this scandal emerges that Kevin Spacey has been abusing people for a very long time, and his abusive behavior was being covered up all the time because he was such an acclaimed actor. And this was kind of part of that whole, the growth of this whole Me Too movement and all this basically, I think, revolution in Hollywood, where this behavior was no longer tolerated and had finally had consequences, massive consequences. And so Kevin Spacey was publicly shamed, was fired from House of Cards, but the last season was already in the works. They'd already written the script. It relied on Frank Underwood's role, and they decided to not let the rest of the cast and people involved in the production suffer the consequences of Kevin Spacey's misbehavior. And so they decided to rewrite the entire last season. And Claire Underwood, still played by Robin Wright, was going to take the lead in that final season. So I was reading that. And then in one of those articles, it was brought to my attention that actually, and of course, lots of you will already know this, but I totally missed that. Robin Wright is actually, her first role was the Princess Bride. She is the Princess Bride in The Princess Bride. And that was at the start of her career. And look at where she is now in her career. Still one of the best television actresses that we currently have. And then I was reminded of a book that I started reading a year ago, probably, when I bought it on the Kindle store, which is As You Wish, Inconceivable Tales from the Making of the Princess Bride by actor Cary Elwes, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, who plays Wesley, of course, in The Princess Bride. So his memoirs are a lot of fun to read. Of course, The Princess Bride is kind of a classic geeky movie. If you want to get geek credits, first thing you do is watch The Princess Bride. It's full of one-liners. Like half of the memes on the internet are based on The Princess Bride. So having just read this about Robin Wright's current role in House of Cards, I was like, I want to go reread the book and finish reading the book to hear the stories about how her career started and perhaps her interesting anecdotes. And so it's a lot of fun reading the book. Unfortunately, I didn't buy the audiobook. I just have the Kindle book. I've heard that the audiobook is also really, really worth it. But audiobooks are still so expensive. You know, they're usually, I don't know, $25. And even when they're on sale, if you already own the Kindle version, you can usually purchase the Audible version for a reduced price. It's usually still $13. And that for an audiobook is not much. But if you're like me, I'm devouring audiobooks. So that would become very costly over time. Anyway, I read another interesting anecdote This has nothing to do with Carrie Elves or with Robin Wright, but with another famous actor that had his debut in The Princess Bride, which is Mandy Patinkin. And Mandy Patinkin, if you're a little bit younger and you watch a lot of TV, you may know him mostly from Homeland, where he plays this bearded guy who's sometimes a little bit kind of gray, morally ambiguous, but still turns out always out to be the father figure, the protagonist of that series. So what you may not know is that same Mandy Patinkin plays Inigo Montoya, who is one of the most hilarious characters in The Princess Bride. And, well, you'll know his line. "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die." What I did not know, so it's this swordsman, apparently one of the most famous swordsmen on the planet, and he is pursuing this six-fingered criminal who has murdered the father of Inigo Montoya. So it's a subplot in the story of The Princess Bride. But I read in the book, and later on also in an interview with Mandy Patinkin, that he actually, this whole story struck a nerve with Patinkin because he had just lost his father, who died, I think, just a few years before they started filming The Princess Bride, died of cancer. And Patinkin was very attached to his father. So when he read the script, he was like, so this is a story. I have to play a guy who is actually trying to take revenge on the guy that killed his father, six fingers. For him, that criminal became the symbol of the cancer that had taken away his father. And so a lot of the passion that you see in Inigo Montoya's role is coming straight from the heart. And so here's a quote that I found in an interview. During filming, Patinkin says, "I would walk through the maze of gardens while I was just trying to relax or while they were lighting a scene, and I was talking to my father, who had died not that many years ago before we made the film, and I always had it in my mind that if I could get the six-fingered man, if Inigo could get the six-fingered man, then my father, Mandy's father, would come back and be with me." I was like, wow, that gives that role such an incredible, deeper and more emotional layer. I had no idea. And then Mandy Patinkin himself survived cancer. He got prostate cancer, was treated for it. And in a lot of interviews, he was known as being a difficult actor to work with, always angry. And I think a lot of the anger came from that unresolved, early death of his father, probably. I don't know. But he himself says that after he was cured from that cancer, it changed him. And he kind of much more started to look not just live in his anger and look at the things that were not good in his life, but look at the life that he was given to him. In contrast with his father, who died from cancer, he survived cancer. And so it made him a much more grateful person for the things that he had and the life that was given to him. Well, I was like, wow, there's some beautiful lessons in there. So that was what I wanted to share with you in this book segment. Let's take a short break to the world of tech.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Let's plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device. And it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner build... Whoa.
Well, all your technology stuff just... ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about camera equipment. You may know that I'm filming most of my TV shows and also the Tridio documentaries that we're working on with a Canon 80D, which is a wonderful DSLR camera, which means it's a mirror camera with a mirror. It's a pretty heavy camera, but it has the big advantage of being able, it has a big sensor, much bigger than a phone or a small handycam. And you can use professional lenses with it. And the bigger the lens, the bigger the bigger the camera, the bigger the lens, the more light comes in, the more you can do with that light in terms of fuzzy backgrounds and that kind of stuff. So you can do really nice filmic stuff with that camera. The downside is a Canon 80D or any DSLR is not made for filming primarily. The entire the ergonomics of the device is made to hold it still and snap a picture, but not to move around with it that much. So if you want to have stable footage, then either you have to know how to move. It's called the ninja walk, for instance. It means you have to move like a ninja, always making sure that everything you do when you're filming is smooth and fluid, so it won't be jarring in your final takes. And another option, of course, is to put the camera on a tripod. Now, me being a cheapskate and also not being a very rich priest, I was using two tripods. One I bought when I was 12. It's a very small aluminum tripod that I've used for years. The only tripod that I had. And it's way too small, actually. And it's super lightweight, which is an advantage if you have to travel far away, for instance, to Rome. You could just put it in your carry-on luggage and everything. The downside is it's not very stable. And then I have another tripod that I bought in the first year that I was working as a priest in the parish, in my first parish. So that tripod is also 15 years old. It was a long time ago. And back then, I didn't have any money either. I even had to get a loan from the parish to buy myself a car. I had no money whatsoever because I'd never worked. So no income, nothing to... I had spent my last dime on paying my studies. So that tripod was slightly bigger than the small aluminum tripod, but it was part aluminum, part plastic. But at least I could bring it up to my own height. So if you do presentation text, for instance, you can just have the lens of the camera on the same level as your eyes, which you always want if you're filming. That tripod also started to fall apart. And I remember one time I was filming a few episodes in Rome, and I had to record a presentation text. And I thought it might have been a good idea, or it could be a good idea, to go film that near the Tiber, the river the Tiber. On both sides, there's a bit of a stone ledge on which you can walk and stand. And then I'd have a nice view of the city. Plus, added advantage, I wouldn't have all the noise coming from the streets, because that's one of the major issues when you go film in Rome. It's a very, very noisy city. Not just because of the noisy Italians. They are always shouting to each other, mama! But also because of the ambulances. And the cars and the honking and... it's just a noisy city. So I set up the camera on that tripod, and it was a very hot day. And it was really difficult because I have to go back and forth, you know. I have to kind of try to find a good composition, stand in place, take out my phone, because I have to use my phone to focus, for instance. Can't do that because there's no cameraman. So I'm using the phone, which has an app that connects to the Canon. I point at my face so the face is in focus, and then I press record on the phone. I have to put the phone away and then do my presentation. So I was struggling because it was hot and I just couldn't remember the text, and I don't know, there's just plenty of stuff. Oh, there were lots of flies also, and the flies were constantly flying in my eyes and into my face. So did a lot of takes, none of them worked. And then in the corner of my eye, I see rats running beside the water. It's like, I don't want to stay here any longer. And so I give it a few more takes. And then while I'm recording, I all of a sudden see the tripod and the camera slowly falling backwards. And with a big clunk, the camera hits the stone ledge near the river. It was like, that's the end. That's the end of the camera. That's the end of the tripod. Lo and behold, the camera is still in one piece. There's a dent in it in the back, but nothing is broken. It was actually still recording. I should look up that footage if I can find it somewhere. But that was the moment that I realized this is not wise to go film with a tripod that cost $40. It's made out of plastic. It's too lightweight and it's falling apart. It's just, I could have ruined my camera and ruined my stay because I didn't have a backup camera to film. And I didn't have an insurance back then. Fortunately, now that we have Martin who's taking care of all the business aspects of our enterprise, we are insured. But back then, no insurance because too expensive. So I was like, I got to get myself a new tripod. And then, but tripods are expensive, especially the good quality ones. There's like one brand a lot of people use, a lot of my colleagues use, Manfrotto. It's also for amateurs, but I was eyeing this Manfrotto tripod, but geez, it was like $400. And then I heard that they were going to clean out a cupboard at the company where I work, or that I work for in Hilversum. And they had some spare parts and some stuff that was lying around. Nobody used it anymore. If I was interested to take a look, well, sure I am. And so I was able to recover a wireless Sennheiser microphone set, which was incomplete. So they didn't have the microphone that usually goes with it. So they were like, well, nobody's going to use that. I was like, okay, it's always nice to have a second wireless microphone. Then, of course, I need to buy myself a new microphone, but that's still much less than buying the entire set. And then there was this tripod standing in the corner. I was like, whoa, that's a Manfrotto tripod, and it's relatively lightweight, but it's a lot sturdier than what I currently have. Can I take that with me? And so we were inspecting it, and it turned out that on the head of the tripod, so the tripod is the legs, and then on top of that is what we call the mounting head, which is the most important part of the tripod. It's if the more expensive ones have a fluid, as there's this hydraulic fluid in it, so that you can make very, very nice smooth movements. Well, this hydraulic head was missing the connecting part, so the part you attach to your camera, so you can then click it into the head of the tripod. And since that was missing, nobody had used it for years. It was a little bit dented, but this is a solid, really good quality tripod. And so I took it home. I was like, they gave it to me. And just the other day, I was looking for that remaining spare part, found it on a website, ordered it. It came in. I had to look up the manual on how to attach it because it wasn't very intuitive. So that's one of the great wonders nowadays. You just type in, you know, the type number of your tripod and then manual, and you can download the PDF. And so after looking at some YouTube videos and reading the manual, I was finally able to figure out how to attach my DSLR to that little mounting bracket that I bought and then mount it on the tripod. And so it's now looking at me. It's in the corner of the studio here. And so for, what did I pay? 19 euros. I have a professional tripod. Now that makes this Dutch guy super happy because I spent even less money than I spent as a 12-year-old on that first tripod. But now I have a tripod that I can take wherever I go, no matter how rough the terrain. This is a solid tripod. And from now on, my equipment is safe.
Catholics rock!
It's time for a visit to the Peculiar Bunch, the place where we talk about Catholic stuff.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
And today I just want to briefly talk with you about stuff that's happening in the Catholic world that I'm a part of, via my parish. I.e.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
I.e., that abbreviation, I always mispronounce it by EA, but that's an entertainment company that makes video games. I.E., it stands for ita est in Latin, which means that is. So that is my parish. The Catholic world, that is my parish, because big changes are happening as we speak. I told you about the second parish that is added to the pastoral team. And that, of course, has massive consequences because that other parish has a ton of churches. And I think in total, 12 churches? So, I don't know, we'll have 17 church buildings. And we only have three priests. And I am just a weekend assistant. So I'm not even a parochial vicar. It's pretty obvious that that creates a lot of problems and also makes us wonder, what are we going to do? So it is an occasion, I think, to, because of the situation and the lack of personnel, we need to rethink the future. And in order to rethink the future, you need to have a plan. And that is one of the... So I'm telling you, I'm sharing this story because I think it also applies to other moments in life, other situations. When everything works and you have enough money and you have enough projects and you get good feedback and everything is working as planned, one of the... I mean, that's very cool. That's something to be extremely grateful of. But there is a danger, and that is that you become complacent and that you think... this is going to last forever. This is never going to change. And we know that in this world, nothing lasts. You know, not even the pizza that's currently in the oven. No, I haven't got a pizza in the oven right now. Otherwise, I wouldn't be podcasting. But it's there are just a few things that have the value of eternity. Those are the things that we take with us to heaven. Our car, our clothes, our job, not part of it. So... in a parish, of course, we're always supposed to work on the things that last, on eternal life, helping people to reach that eternal life and help them to discern in life what is worth your energy, your resources, your money, your love, what to do with this life to make sure that it yields results that will last forever. When Jesus talks about investments, he's talking about it in that way. Invest in the things that last, not in the things that perish. You can be super rich, be a farmer that is mega successful, has his barns full of grain, and the next day he dies. What are you going to take with you? Invest in things that you can take with you and that have lasting value. Well, the big danger of being in a situation that's comfortable and that seems to work fine is that you become complacent and you think, well, we don't have to tweak it. We don't have to think about what we do here. We'll just continue to do what we've always done. And that is something that you can see in a lot of churches, not just in my parish. You see that everywhere. Is this idea, and also sometimes entitlement, of an older generation in the pews that thinks, well, we've always done it this way. We like it this way. We're not going to change anything. Well, if this is a young priest with ideas, well, he'll just have to do what we want him to do. And let's forget about all that other youth stuff and evangelization and new media. We don't want that. We don't need that. It's been fine so far. Don't bother us with this. Same thing with church music. We like this church music. We like organ and Latin and whatever, you know, less quality church music. It's not even nice, but we're used to it. So don't change it. It's even the seats that people take in the pews. Sometimes they will just claim the place where they sit in church. And when there's someone else sitting in their spot, it's like, that's my spot. I've been sitting there for 30 years. You, young person that is new in this church, you just find yourself another spot. Well, chances are that person will leave the church and never return. It's a behavior that can be crippling and can be paralyzing. I don't think that it's by
coincidence that there is a story about someone who's paralyzed in one of the Gospels. And Jesus tells him, take up your bed, stand, and go home, you know? It's like sometimes you have to pick up your bed and start moving. And that is, I think, a very important message to our churches. In a lot of the countries that you and I live in nowadays, the church is in crisis. And church is diminishing in its presence, doesn't reach as many people, doesn't reach younger generations. But for some reasons, we're all stuck in the behavior that was perhaps warranted when the church was successful, which is probably in the time that the current older generation was young. That was when the church was good, so let's keep doing that. They don't want to change. In my current situation, it is visible in a number of things. Our bishop has asked us to pick one church in the overall parish that has many church locations, and to make sure that in that church we will have Mass every Sunday, that we can people can find all the sacraments there. That basically take one church and make it a model Catholic church, and then do as much as you can in the other buildings. I think it's wise. It's understandable. Same is true in the new parish that will be added to ours. But the risk is that parish, which is usually just one of the central churches, hasn't really thought it through what that means for their future. It does not only mean that you have to take care of the liturgy and make sure that the Eucharist is always celebrated with dignity and beauty, but it also means you need to have an audience for that Eucharist and for the sacraments. And to make sure that if you are chosen to be the center of the parish, at least a physical center, then you need to work on being that central place for the people around you. And to make sure that that place keeps renewing itself, that younger generations feel welcome there. And that means that you have to invite these younger people to think with you, that you have to involve the children and the teenagers. Well, in the church next to where I live, there are some very, very careful, modest attempts to slightly change small things, but not too much, certainly not too much, but it's not enough. And we're being the small changes are nothing compared to the big changes in the society around us. And so if you need to make a big leap into the future, it requires big steps and big changes. And one of the challenges is going to be, how do you bring that about with people that are actually very comfortable in their current life? And I don't know. I wish I had an answer for that, but I do see that, for instance, if you want to have a younger generation in your pews, let's call it that way, let's call it like it is, that's what a lot of parishes want, then why is not the first question that you ask yourself in everything you do, also in the money that you spend, how does that serve the renewal of our audience? How can we find those younger people with their children, how can we make this feel like a home to them? Last week I told you how much you can learn from entertainment parks like Disneyland or the Efteling in the Netherlands. How much consumer-oriented they are. That's not a bad word. That is a bunch of valuable lessons that the churches can also take at heart. And it's also, in a way, true for people that work in the media, like podcasters, vloggers, bloggers, you name it. If you have a message, it's not enough to have a good message. It's also necessary to go out there and find an audience for that. And if your audience gets older, which in my case is absolutely happening, I used to be one of the younger podcasters. I've been doing this since 2005. But I can't just sit back and wait for that audience to stop listening or go away or die. I want my message to be heard by newer audiences as well. That's why I'm currently streaming this episode on Facebook. And I'm using a green screen and I'm using a camera and I'm recording this and we're putting this out. And it's a small step. We need to do so much more to get to the bigger audiences. My ambition is not to just keep doing what I've always done. I want to be able to reach audiences like Netflix does, like Amazon Prime does. I'm currently, one of the reasons that I'm investing so much in the documentaries, and that's a learning process, it's hard, is because I want my productions to be on the level of the best stuff you see on Netflix. And that's not just in terms of equipment or quality of the image, but also quality of the contents, telling the stories that millions of people want to watch. That's really hard. But I challenge myself to do that. I challenge Tridio to go that route. Because if you don't challenge yourself, you won't change. And if you don't change, you get obsolete and you disappear. So that is kind of the lessons that I'm learning currently with Tridio and with the media work that I do. I try to convey that to the parishioners here and try to help them start investing, start trying new stuff. If you don't, you disappear. It's time for some science fiction since we're talking about the future. And I need to sneeze and cough a little bit while you're listening. Listen to this. Nerdy music! Should have put a glass of water next to me. What was I thinking? I have a cold. And I'm talking for an hour in a warm studio. Oh well. Thank goodness for the jingles.
I see aliens. Little aliens from outer space.
And how are things in outer plutonia?
How many times have I told you not to wear your space boots in the house?
Go to shape. I mean, you could donate my body to science fiction.
Get your suit on! We need ya!
Hey, science fiction, let's talk Star Wars. any excuse is good for me to talk Star Wars. There was some interesting casting news. This won't be spoilers by the time, you know, the next Star Wars movie comes around. So it's about casting, so I feel free to talk about this. You can always, you know, put fingers in your ears and go la 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 for 9 minutes. Lando was almost in The Last Jedi. Lando, of course, is in Solo, but Luke Skywalker, a.k.a. Mark Hamill, wanted, actually, Lando to appear in The Last Jedi. And they actually thought about it. Rian Johnson gave it some serious consideration. He said in an interview recently, in terms of Lando, I briefly considered, would he work in the part that eventually went to Benicio del Toro? Well, I don't think you would have ever buy that Lando would just completely betray the characters like that and have that level of moral ambiguity, because we love Lando and you'd come into that with that expectation. I'm very glad that they didn't give him the role of Benicio del Toro, although I really, that's one of the weakest points of the movie, in my opinion, the Benicio del Toro character. I understand that they used it for the character development of Finn, because Finn has to find his idealism, you know. He needs to learn how to become a hero instead of becoming the guy who always runs away when it starts to become dangerous. And then contrasting him with Benicio del Toro's character, who is basically someone who just whatever side works best for him, that's who he sides with. That helps Finn realize that actually he is a rebel. He wants to choose a side and not run away anymore. But anyway, I thought it was a very flawed crutch for that character development. But it makes sense that they originally, when they were brainstorming about the story, were thinking about, you know, every role needs to have a certain way to it. And putting Lando in a movie would have helped, would definitely have helped. Well, now, apparently, there are talks that J.J. Abrams is bringing back Lando in the sequel to The Last Jedi, Episode 9. And I couldn't be more excited about this, and so are a lot of Star Wars fans. Billy Dee Williams was seen a few months ago having lost quite a bit of weight, and he was bragging about how much fitness he did. Well, I have seen Billy Dee Williams at a convention, a Star Wars convention, and he was definitely not fit back then. Well, when someone all of a sudden starts to go, and he wasn't playing in that many movies. He did a bit of voiceover work, I think, for Star Wars Rebels. That's about it. But if all of a sudden an older actor, and he's like in his 70s, starts to work out, starts to lose weight, yeah, you bet that he's been asked for a role. And so, very, very cool, because of course we we no longer will see Carrie Fisher as Leia, which means Carrie was the only one of the old cast that could still save the day somehow and play a major role in the ninth Star Wars movie. And so bringing back Lando, especially now that we have brought Lando's character back in the limelight with the Solo movie, even though a lot of people haven't seen it, but now that Lando is so much in our minds, it totally makes sense to bring him back in episode 9. That will wrap up the story of Rey and Kylo Ren. And of course, Lando was Han's best friend. If you can't bring Kylo Ren's mother on stage to somehow remind Kylo of who he is, then why not bring his father's best friend back and let him? That's all hypothesis. It's just me speculating. But I would be super excited about it, and I think it's a really genius move. I'm getting so many signals that J.J. Abrams is making the right choices when it comes to episode 9. And even though I think that most people totally underestimate the importance of The Last Jedi and the choices, the difficult choices that Rian Johnson had to make for the story to move, to go beyond just a rehash of Empire Strikes Back, I think that J.J. Abrams will be able to win back the hearts of the people that really didn't like The Last Jedi. And there's another interesting casting rumor. These are all rumors. They're not confirmed yet. According to some rumors, Variety, that's not just a source, Kerry Russell has been approached to play an action-heavy role, which will feature action-heavy fight scenes. Now, Kerry Russell is an actress that I only know from The Americans, which is a very creepy, great, great Netflix series, captivating, must watch, but also incredibly close to reality with all the, you know, machinations and the influence that Russia seems to have on politics all over the world. In The Americans, Kerry Russell plays this double spy, she's a Russian spy that lives in the United States under a fake identity with her husband. And then, of course, the entire series tells their story. Are they going to get caught? What kind of damage are they going to do? What does it do to them to be so much integrated in American society and American culture and still, you know, supposed to be a Russian agent? Where is your allegiance? It's a brilliant, brilliant basis for an interesting story. But Kerry Russell, for a lot of American listeners, may be known mostly for her role in the 90s sitcom Felicity. I had never heard of that sitcom, but apparently it was pretty big in the 90s. And guess who was at the helm of that sitcom? J.J. Abrams. It was one of his earlier work on TV. So they're bringing back an actress that he has worked with extensively for an action role in Star Wars 9. And I think it's not just about the chemistry between J.J. Abrams and his former pupil, she was pretty young at the time. But I think it is also a sign that Disney is moving the target from the old Star Wars fans, the entitled Star Wars fans, like I'm one of those Star Wars fans of the first hour, those that saw Star Wars in theaters. They will go anyway, because Star Wars is part of our identity and our life. But they're now shifting the target to the generation of the people that grew up in the 90s, that were watching these teenage sitcoms in the 90s. So it's the generation that now have kids. It's a very important generation to bring into the Star Wars realm, because they will pay the tickets for their kids and their grandchildren eventually. So interesting to see how casting itself can be part of the overall PR and marketing strategy of Disney. And of course, I'm super curious to know who she's going to play. I have my theories, but I won't talk about it here because it may go into spoiler territory. Other than Felicity and the Americans, she is already known for some stunt-heavy films like Mission Impossible and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So she may be a very, very good choice. That is all about the world of sci-fi. I'm just taking a quick look at my list. There's only one topic left that I need to talk about.
Just look at the X-rays! You see that dark spot there? Whiplash!
Whiplash? Oh no!
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma!
It's just a very, very short teaser because I need to start wrapping up the show. A teaser for the newest episode of The Walk, in which I will talk not only about me being sick for a week, but also about my progress with the ketogenic diet. I am losing so much weight, but I'm eating bacon and chicken and mayonnaise and avocados and lots of veggies. It's delicious. And I lose weight like never before. And I'm never hungry. And if you want to hear more about that, I recommend you listen to the next episode of The Walk. Go check it out on Tridio.com. And with that, it's time to wrap up this show. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for the after show if you're one of my patrons, because I'm going to talk about what's coming up soon on Tridio.com, and it's very cool. If you want to listen to that exclusive podcast, consider becoming a patron over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And not only will you get access to the podcast, you'll help me, which I appreciate. Thank you.